Did you know that you may have a ticking time bomb inside your retirement account? Hello, my name is Jim Wayne. I'm a tax attorney here in Maine, and welcome to Tax Resolution Talk. And in this episode, I'm going to be discussing individual retirement accounts specifically. And in the next episode, we'll talk about employer-sponsored retirement, like a 401k. What's going on is I had a client who had a problem come up. Owed money to the IRS, we're trying to work out a payment plan, but we discovered that he's got a huge tax problem that could blow up in his face. And it's all related to a 401k that he set up for a new business that he was going to start. And there's some things regarding the formalities that may not have been observed, and maybe some of the investments that he made could cause a huge problem for him. And I said, you know what? I really want to talk about some of these more obscure tax problems because they aren't often discussed in the general community. If you're someone who's very into investing in an individual retirement account, you may come across this, but the general public, you know, before they become involved, or maybe if they aren't as educated in the background of some of these things, they may run into trouble. So it's considered like a public service announcement. And in this one, talking just about individual retirement accounts. Those are the sorts of things that you can set up with a bank, with a brokerage firm like Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, or through a mutual fund company like Fidelity or Vanguard. There's a whole universe of problems that could happen in this sort of area of tax law. I'm going to try to keep it dumbed down because honestly, I don't know everything that could go wrong. And I'm sure there's people who are in the community who deal with IRAs every day who could tell you a million things, make your hair curl, I guess. I'm just going to stick to the ones that I think are most common and ones that I'm kind of thinking about, concerned about with my clients. So we'll start with the low-hanging fruit. These are the things that commonly happen to every IRA. And one of those is excess contributions. For many people, they know that there's a certain amount that they can contribute, but they're not aware of some of the restrictions that could reduce the amount that you could contribute. So you had to be very careful. I'm not sure what the amount is currently. I don't always have the top of my head, but I believe it's like $6,000. Don't shoot me or send me nasty grams if I'm wrong, but let's just say it's $6,000. It can be limited by if you don't have enough earned income. So if you don't make more than $6,000 in compensation through wages, then you can't contribute the full $6,000. Now, there is an exception for a married spouse who doesn't work. They can, quote unquote, borrow the earned income from the working spouse to contribute. And I think for divorced spouses who are receiving alimony, they can use the alimony as, quote unquote, earned income for purposes of making a contribution. But there are that limitation right there. Then there's limitations on adjusted gross income. So if you make too much, you may have a limit on how much you can contribute. There also is a limitation if you have contributions going toward an employer-sponsored plan, like a 401k or 403b. So there are all these little limitations, and you could run into an excess contribution. And what will happen is, as long as that excess contribution is in your IRA, there is a penalty amount. It's like an excise tax, really. And until you pull that out, or you can sort of treat it as a contribution for another year, but you have to essentially kind of get it out. Otherwise, you're going to pay, I think it's like 6% on the amount that's excess each year. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but if your account's not earning a lot, that can really eat away at what you invested in there. You've also got to watch out for what you're investing the IRA's money in. So you can pretty much invest in anything that the company that sponsors this IRA will allow you, except for life insurance contracts, an investment in a business where it is a corporation which is electing to be taxed as an S corporation. You also cannot invest in collectibles, artwork, alcoholic beverages, certain tangible personal property, baseball cards, Cabbage Patch Kids, or, oh God, what's the, I'm trying to remember what the more recent collectible item, fine china, artwork. There's a whole bunch of things, oriental rugs, things like that, those collectibles, coins, stamps, precious metals, though there are some sort of carve-outs for coins and precious metals. I think the coins are those that are issued by the U.S. government. And as far as precious metals, I think they have to be in a certain form. But regardless, those are prohibited investments. If you make one of these investments through your IRA, it's treated as a taxable distribution to you on the date of that investment. So you could be subject to income taxes on the distribution plus early withdrawal penalties. Now, the last big area of problems takes a little bit of talking about, and those are prohibited transactions. So the first thing you need to understand is your IRA is kind of like a box. Consider it like a box. And you're going to put your money in it. In return, either you're going to be able to defer the tax on that, or if it's a Roth IRA, you can put it in after tax. But once you take the money out, you won't be taxed on any appreciation over those years. But to get that ability to sort of take it away and outside the normal taxable realm, you've got to meet certain rules. And one of the things that Congress, in its infinite wisdom, didn't want people to do, and I agree with them, is that they didn't want people to use the IRA as a way to sort of reduce the cost of essentially gambling with their money. So you can't engage in transactions where there's a high risk of failure, or I guess this would be one way to look at it, or a way for you to take advantage of the IRA, violate your, I guess what you call their fiduciary duty. So two pieces to this. First, disqualified persons you have to know. So people like yourself, your spouse, your children, if you have a business to which the IRA is going to invest in, that company, if you have a certain percentage of ownership, would be disqualified, or the IRA is engaging in a transaction with someone who is an officer, a shareholder, or a highly compensated employee of a business. I believe it's instead of a 50, I think it's 50% ownership for if you own the company. But if some of those people are involved, these other people in this business are involved, I think it's if you have someone who has a 10% interest in the business, or it's somebody who's related to someone with a 10% interest in the business. So be very careful figuring out who are the potentially disqualified people so that the IRA does not engage in any transactions with them. Because if it does, it'll bust open the box, and then everything will immediately come back to you to be taxed. It's treated as everything is distributed to you that's an asset inside the IRA at fair market value at the first day of the year. So let's say everything there is valued at $100,000. I get a $100,000 distribution at the beginning of the year. You do get an offset for what you invested in it. Unless you're sort of upside down and you've made some really bad investment decisions, there'll oftentimes be a taxable gain that you have to be concerned with. And I believe you also get hit with early withdrawal penalties, though I'm not 100% sure on that. But knowing the way Congress works, you'll probably get slapped with an early withdrawal penalty too. So now that you know kind of generally what's a disqualified person, what kind of things do you have to be concerned about when dealing with these disqualified people? So first, let's look at transactions from the perspective of you as a disqualified person engaging with an action related to the IRA. It's kind of a funny way to say it. I apologize. Essentially, you doing something to your IRA. So if you pledge it as security, or you try to take a loan out of the IRA, that's a disqualified transaction. I'm sorry, a prohibited transaction by a disqualified person. If Another type of transaction is where the IRA is going to invest or engage in a transaction with someone else on the outside. So I have an IRA. I direct the sort of the trustee, the manager of the IRA, to invest in a property that I own. So they're going to buy it. Because I own the property and I'm a disqualified person, then that's a prohibited transaction. If it invests in a company to which I have an ownership interest, or it invests in a company which then lends money to another company which is owned by a disqualified person. So it has sort of a broad reach here. What the rules are designed to do is prevent you from taking advantage of your IRA. In other words, engaging in a transaction that benefits you personally without essentially getting money distributed from the IRA to yourself. Going back a little bit to, you know, you engaging in a transaction with your IRA, like by that promise, you know, having to get a loan or pledging a security, you have to be very careful if your IRA owns an asset that can be used for something of a personal nature. So if you have it invest in real estate, and a self-directed IRA can do that, and you go and stay the night at the rental property, whether it be a vacation home, a condo, a camp, any sort of thing like that, you stay the night because you're a disqualified person. It doesn't matter whether you pay fair market value or not for that right. Because you're disqualified, the IRA is engaging a transaction with you. No good. Prohibited. And strangely enough, if let's say you have a rental property and you want to go and work on the property to improve it, then that is a prohibited transaction. Because even though there's no money changing hand and it's you giving value to an asset inside the IRA, as opposed to you taking advantage of an asset in an IRA, they still don't want you to do it because they consider it sweat equity, and that to a certain extent, you're benefiting because you're increasing the value of the asset. I guess I understand where they're going with it. They just don't want people to try to find any wiggle room there. And so they're just per se, any transaction is going to be, you know, not allowed. There are certain exceptions. I was looking at, there's a gentleman who has an online, it's a website or something else out there on the internets, as the kids say, and he's got a compilation of all cases involving, you know, self-directed IRAs and people in prohibited transactions, or it was said it was a prohibited transaction, but later the courts ruled that it wasn't, and it gets kind of out there. So there may be something I'm saying here that you could find a particular exception to, but generally speaking, whether you're doing something with your IRA, trying to use it as security for a loan, or take a loan against it, or you're having it you're directing the IRA to invest in things where you are somehow the beneficiary of it, directly or indirectly, those are all prohibited transactions that'll get you into trouble. So those are sort of the big three things. The only other thing I could think of offhand would be, you know, if you decide that you're going to do everything yourself with the IRA and you don't follow all the proper formalities, that could get you into trouble too. But I think it's very rare. I think most people rely upon some other party that isn't them to do that. So that's all I have to say about tax traps when dealing with your individual retirement account. In the next episode, I'm going to be just talking about those employer-sponsored plans. Specifically, if you're a small business owner who has set up a 401k or other similar retirement plan for your business, things that you need to watch out for. Because most of what I've talked about for the individual retirement accounts are also the same issue with those employer-sponsored plans. This one is not going to be quite as long. That next episode is not going to be quite as long as this one. There isn't as much to talk about, but there are some things regarding the formality of setup and certain other transactions as a highly compensated employee that could get you into trouble. So I look forward to our next episode. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you've got any questions, you can certainly get a hold of me at 207-502-7181. Or you can email me at jwade@jdwadelaw.com. And don't worry, it'll be in the show notes, so you don't have to write that down. But thank you all for listening, and have a wonderful day.